So it has been said for a long time the Fifth Circuit is a conservative court. You can argue about what that means. But if the definition of conservative court is a lot of judges appointed by Republican presidents, the Fifth Circuit is clearly continues in that mode and continues to be even more and more so. That's just the way it is, the result of the appointment process, and these are relatively young judges for the most part that have been recently appointed. That's likely to stay for some time. I had a couple of other slides that I've prepared for blogging that I was going to share about how this has affected en banc votes in the Fifth Circuit, but they all had said the same thing, which was that basically there's been some zeal by the new judges to go back and look at some old cases, but they've always come up a vote or two short, mainly because this particular vacancy had been empty. So that might change in the next year or so when this Mississippi vacancy, assuming this the judge is confirmed and it moves on. But as of right now, while there's been a lot of enthusiasm for a lot of en banc votes, there haven't been that many more en banc arguments or rulings en banc to change prior precedent. A quick reminder that you own the courthouse in New Orleans. This is from Judge Costa. There's an endless stream of these cases out of the BP claims resolution process arising from Deepwater Horizon. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers filed a claim. I don't know why, but they did. It was for a lot of money, and they wanted it to be a secret, that it was them. And they could sort of kind of keep this sealed during the process, but argument was going to be held, and they said, we'd like you to seal the courtroom. And the Fifth Circuit said, we're not going to do that. This is the public courtroom. You are, for God's sakes, a football team. The public gets to come in and see this. Are we open to suggestions? Sure. If there's some really compelling reason, we'll think about it. But just because you're embarrassed that you're filing a big claim isn't going to work. There's a strong principle that you're able to come in and see what's going on in your courthouse. So I thought that was it's not particularly partisan. It was a single judge opinion. It was a ruling on a motion. I thought it was a nice ringing endorsement of what they're all about down there. It's a big intimidating looking courthouse, but they're mindful they have a public mission there. They will vigorously enforce arbitration clauses if they believe you are in the scope of the provision. If you proceed to an arbitration, good luck trying to get that award set aside on some grievance or another. But precisely because the Fifth Circuit is so protective of the process, they're pretty restrictive on the front end when they analyze arbitration clauses. So here, it's a wind farm, thus the windmill picture. Got that, windmills, wind farm. And the arbitration clause was limited to the party's performance. The argument against arbitration, well, this isn't a thing about performance. We all know what the parties did. The question is, what does the agreement mean? It's an interpretation question, not a performance question, and the court said, you're right. We agree arbitration does not apply. So that's an interesting distinction. I hadn't thought about it before. It's probably unique to this language in this provision, but if you're dealing with this in a case, it's something to be alert for, and if you're asked to draft a clause for an ongoing business relationship, it could have some real benefit, potentially. I didn't know this existed, this particular procedure. We have here the kind of a classic thing. Oops, nobody actually has a copy of the arbitration agreement, but the defendant says, I know I sent it to you, and there's a whole process for that, and you didn't say anything back, and so you're bound. And the plaintiff said, well, you mailed it to me, but I wasn't getting my mail, and you don't have a signed copy, by the way, and I don't have any memory of ever signing it. The district court said, well, mailing is good enough. The Fifth Circuit said, not really. I mean, she had evidence here. And so under the Federal Arbitration Act, you see this principle all the time in cases, but never actually goes the next step. The principle you see all the time is, if you have a quarrel about arbitrability, or you have to be talking about the clause itself, not generally about the contract. If I say, you and I never had a contract, thus I don't have to arbitrate, that's not going to work. You have to say, I've got a problem with that specific provision. And that's hard to do, right? That one particular clause out of a contract was the subject of something unique and different from the rest of the contract. Here it was. It was an employment relationship where there are a lot of different documents comprised the contract between the parties. And under the Federal Arbitration Act, you are entitled by statute to a jury trial on that issue, whether or not there was an arbitration agreement. I didn't know that was there. You see that first principle, but you don't really see what happens when you get all the way down the road with that. So I thought that was interesting, and I learned that's something that can happen if you generate an issue of fact on that point. So our Supreme Court has been, both the United States and Texas Supreme Courts, but the U.S. Supreme Court has taken the lead on that, has been very assertive about sort of scaling back some of the jurisdictional principles you may have learned in law school. They've put a great deal of emphasis on the defendant having to have availed themselves of the forum. The fact that they sort of ended up there, somebody else came to the forum, that's not good enough. They have to have in some way chosen, voluntarily assumed the benefits and burdens of doing business in that state. Here you have, so that's clear enough, simple enough, that's caused some old opinions to kind of get looked at. Here you have kind of the perfect test case, right? Because you have people that, this company is in the business of servicing, operating freighters, or these container ships. And so they have no control over where the container ship goes, right? The owner of the ship says, today you're going to New Orleans, tomorrow you're going to Panama, next week you're going to go to Asia somewhere. But they do have a control as to whether or not they're on the boat, or they can always say, well, we don't want to go there, we quit, we're gone. Is it purposeful availment? Are you subject to jurisdiction in Texas if the owner of the boat says, take my boat to Houston for business reasons that you have nothing to do with, that don't benefit you? And the court said, yes.